I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sarah Wilson, and this is Wild, a show where we talk with the biggest minds in the world about the ideas that can help us love and save our one wild and precious life together on this planet.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Ask Me Anything on the Wild with Sarah Wilson podcast. That's the podcast you're currently listening to with me, Sarah Wilson. I'm recording this from my lounge room in Paris, and if you're watching this via Substack, watching and listening to this episode via Substack, which all of you are invited to do because you can then get to see, I don't know, different backgrounds to the apartment that I live in. Anyway, yes, as I say, I'm recording this from Paris where it is particularly cold. I am told that this is not abnormal for April. The upside, of course, is that I do get to wear all three jumpers that I brought across from Australia. So I feel that they're getting put to good use. I don't know if you're like me, but I get great satisfaction out of using up the things that I went to trouble to bring into my life. Anyway, today's question's a great one. It comes from a Substack reader. And of course, all of the Ask Me Anything questions do come from Substack readers. And you can join at sarahwilson.substack.com, and the link will be in the show notes. And of course, as I say, you can watch this as a video and join in on the discussion thread afterwards with the community if that's something that interests you. So that's via Substack. But yes, today's question comes from Nick Antoinette, and it's a super good question because it comes up quite a lot for me as people are starting to clock onto this idea of a lot of instability ahead, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of systems change or systems collapse. There's talk of climate collapse, financial and energy systems collapse, and of course, fertility collapse, which I have discussed or written about here on a previous post on Substack, I'll put that in the links on the Substack version of all of this if you're interested. But if you are new to the idea, as I say, I will put some links in the Substack post. I've covered quite a lot of this subject on Substack, but also in a few wild episodes. And I'll put links to all of that in the Substack post. And you can catch up as you feel fit or if you feel capable for handling. Anyway, top line though. We've known about collapse for several decades. There's been lots of theorists, Jared Diamond, Joseph Tainter and so on, who've been writing about this since the early 70s or so. A number of economists, mathematical modelists and systems theorists have shown that the complexity and size of everything that makes up our culture today that's been growing and often exponentially for around 200 to 300 years since industrialization, all the stuff that makes up our civilization and this idea that, you know, we're just going to keep growing and getting better and better, it will actually hit a peak in around about the 2020s, so now. So we're talking peak fossil fuels, peak climate balance capacity, peak food and resources, and peak population. Basically, these things will hit a limit where they just can't grow any further because that's what happens. Things run out. And after that, they'll suffer a decline. at a similar rate to which they grew, which, as I say, at many times was exponential. This is just how complex systems work. So in some parts of the world, this will be experienced as climate collapse. I suspect, though, for those of you who are listening to this and you have good internet connection and so on and the luxury of being able to listen to a podcast, it will be experienced probably as financial economic resources collapse, tethered to fossil fuels. There's so much to say on this, and I am writing a book about it, so stay tuned, although don't hold your breath because it's a way off. Anyway, but back to Nick's question. What she's actually asked is, and let me just have a look. My question is about money in this time of collapse. How are you thinking about this for yourself? What does saving and or investing look like for you right now? Okay, there's no easy or right answer to this. And in terms of what experts are saying, again, there's just not concrete data on things, and it would be irresponsible of me to issue financial advice in any context. However, I have spoken to a number of experts in insurance, banking, and energy systems. And I suppose what I can say is that your question, Nick, is one that quite a number of these people are asking of themselves. And really, they've sort of emphasized that there is so much uncertainty. The point is, we don't know where it's all going to hit. We don't know how and when collapse will happen. There is certainly a sense that it will be happening and soon. It really is a matter of extent, and it's also a matter of how we handle it. And so I think that's super, super important. It's something that I emphasize over and over again. As I say, I have to be careful here. I'm not going to issue advice. I'm just going to share my thinking or share what I'm actually doing in this space. So for me, in my early 40s, as my I Quit Sugar business did well, I set about doing all the sensible things that a girl boss is meant to do. So I set up my superannuation, I got some investments set up, I got a will done. But I am now asking the same questions that you're asking, Nick. So what does saving or investing amount to if, you know, I believe that things are going to start to crumble and money is not going to have the same meaning that it currently does? So I am asking these same questions. And in fact, I asked this question of the CEO of a large Australian investment fund who came and visited me in Paris a couple of weeks ago, and we had dinner, and I asked him about all of this. I said, is this stuff that, you know, are people talking about this in the investment and insurance spaces? And he said, absolutely. He said, it's all we're talking about. And I said, well, what's everyone doing? He said, nobody knows what to do. It's business as usual until we can think of something otherwise. I also asked a tech bro, a wealthy tech bro that I met in Spain last week. And we were talking about all this kind of thing because he asked me what I did, and I mentioned I was writing a book about this kind of thing. He said he and his colleagues are also talking about collapse and the future of money and this kind of thing, and that he's moving his money to Bitcoin. Go figure. And I made the point, well, look, there's a very good chance that there won't be the fossil fuels, the energy, enough energy to power Bitcoin going forward. And I talked him through the thinking behind that, and it kind of got him stumped. But as he said, I kind of know this, but I don't want to face it, which is what I think a lot of people are doing in the absence of concrete answers for a way forward. Okay, so for me, being aware of all of this has changed my mindset dramatically. And Nick, it's changed it mostly to a sense of relief rather than panic. So it's relief because it opens up the idea that if money and houses are not going to be worth the same kind of thing going forward in a financial sense, then what are we doing? And when I refer to the houses thing, that CEO I mentioned, he was talking about the fact that his large home in Sydney, not the outskirts of Sydney, reasonably central Sydney, an affluent area, has reached the point where it's no longer insurable. And Of course, what he means by that is that the premiums are so high, it makes it prohibitive. They're higher than the payments on the house. And so it actually renders a house, not a home, a house financially worthless. Because if it can't be insured, then where do you head financially with it? So, yes, all of that's going on. What are we doing then? Where are we placing our priorities if that is the case? And I think that even just asking these questions opens us up to the possibility of thinking about things differently. We become aware of the precariousness of money and the precariousness of it that has always existed, because it's only ever been a transactional tool. It's only been symbolic, and yet we've placed so much on it. We have pegged our entire expectations, our economy, our culture to it. And so we become aware of the ridiculousness of it. And when we do that, there is a sense of relief that comes about. Mostly, most people I know worry about money. That's what we do with money. And no matter how rich or poor you are, that's what we do. We spend our time worrying about whether we've got enough of it. We worry about where it should be in the world. We worry about shuffling it around the board, putting it into different offset accounts and so on and so forth. This realization, this awareness that money won't have its same value in the future has freed me up for a whole lot of things. It's given me the space and time to do the stuff that really matters to me. Nature, being in nature, focusing on love and relating, and to being of service, radical service, which is what I'm setting my life up for. I did a one-on-one with a young woman the other day, and she was asking me a similar question about property. And as I say, property is largely going to become uninsurable. It is already in many parts of Australia, but also in the UK. And I write about that in the updated version of this One Wild and Precious Life, just how much of the UK is at a point where I think by 2040, some large percentage, I think a third, maybe a quarter of the country, country's properties will be uninsurable. So yes, I think it probably for anyone who is one of that, a member of that generation who can't afford to buy a home, perhaps it takes your foot off the pedal a little in terms of worrying about that as a priority. Now, this might sound like doom and gloom to some of you, and I suppose it does take a huge correction in expectations. But what I would say is that in many ways, what is happening, what is ahead for us, could lead to a wonderful correction. A home, a house may return to being an actual home rather than an investment as the investment value of houses decreases. Money might collapse to a level where it really is just a tool, a symbolic tool for swapping goods. These are ideas that are legitimately being talked about in energy and economy circles. And I can put links to a few sources for those conversations in the Substack post. I also see a correction happening in other investments like career and education. And I'm hearing a number of experts advise young people to enter trades, particularly electrical engineering. I know Bill McKibben has talked about this, just with the demand in solar and wind production, like turbines and so on, going forward. There's going to be a huge demand for engineers. Also, the care industries and humanities. I think a number of people out of the UK, but also Switzerland, and other parts of Scandinavia are talking about focusing, steering children, young people to studying humanities, teaching people how to think, because sense-making is going to be the major asset going forward. And, of course, some of the more prestigious careers that my generation grew up thinking we all had to go and follow, like law, are going to be massively impacted by AI as a bare minimum and could wind up being redundant if and when shit really hits the fan. So I'd also personally advise, and again, I'm cautious about using that word, so just take it as top line suggestive thinking, away from studying things like finance and economics. Okay. Now, Nick, part of your question, I think, spoke to retirement and what I was doing about that, what my priorities are there. I suppose all of this has also switched my thinking on where I'll be at in a couple of decades. And really what it's done is actually steered me to wanting to invest in things like, I suppose, relationships and building solidarity, connections, trust, looking out for ways to connect in with communities. And that kind of language has always annoyed me in the past. I know that there's people in the climate movement have talked about community and all that kind of thing. I'm now realizing it is actually the best insurance policy going forward. Nate Hagens, the energy futurist, refers to it as social prepping, that is what we are best off putting our energies into and investing in going forward, is setting up social networks where we're going to be able to solve the problems that we face collectively, because we're going to need that. All of which, of course, might make you think, well, this is the stuff we've been wanting to do for years. We've been craving it. It's the stuff that we know makes a life worth living. And again, all this tough shit that's happening in the world at the moment, I think could see us correct our thinking around this kind of thing and actually force us in to living the actual life we've always wanted to live. So that's certainly a framing that I'm focusing on. It keeps me hopeful. It keeps me optimistic. It keeps me forward moving. I got asked a similar question the other day. Do you feel the need to get land and start to learn how to homestead and, I don't know, kill wildebeest and find ways to skin them and stockpile, I don't know, canned foods? This is a very common reaction from people when they first encounter the idea of collapse and people start looking at real estate in Tasmania and New Zealand and other outposts, remote outposts around the world. And I get that, you know. It's like, well, if we can get an acreage and chooks, you know, that might protect me and my family. But what I say to people who bring that up, and it comes up often, is that sure, but go ahead, go and get your chooks and save some tinned goods. But are you happy to be in a position where, when shit does in fact hit the fan, you will then have to defend this acreage, your chooks, your wonderful homestead with guns? And, you know, that's what it would come down to if things got that bad, which, of course, is the reason why you'd be doing this prepping. And you only have to think of shows like Leave the World Behind, which I did not love, on Netflix, but any other kind of apocalypse movie. You have to defend the thing that you think is going to keep you safe. And I personally do not want to be in that position. That is not how I want to live the rest of my life. That is not what this will be about for me. So, and apart from anything else, I should say, there's actually not enough land on the planet if we were all to pack up our lives in the city and move to acreage. And of course, if we all did that, it would result in some gnarly conflict. Me, I would prefer to be in the city, a city where the people I love are situated, where the people I see, where lots of people are based. And I want to live out whatever reality is ahead for us, being of service, helping, dialing up connection and community, and you can do that in a city. And in a city, it's where I have the best chance of, yes, building communities at scale that can adapt and, I believe, create a great future if that is in fact available to us. Again, this is stuff that I'm exploring in the writing of this book, this very slowly progressing book. So I'm not stockpiling cans. I'm not learning how to skin and kill wild animals, but I'm also not giving up on my investments. I'm not tossing them aside, nor am I saying that anyone should give up on sensible savings plans and so on. In fact, for all intents and purposes, I've not changed anything materially about the way that I go about things financially. But what I am doing is worrying about it less And I'm prioritizing the things that I've always wanted to prioritize, which is love, nature, people, and living right now. As Nate Hagans, who I mentioned just a moment ago, he says, simplify now. Like, that is what you can do. So the social prepping is part of that, and dialing down the complexities, the financial clusterfuckery of your life, like, just, I guess, take the emphasis off all of that and prioritize the beautiful, simple, back to the basic stuff of human existence. In fact, you're looking for a way to prioritize your own life. So, yes, I guess other sort of aspects of that, I'm not consulting my accountant and wishing to invest further. I'm making my decisions about big projects that are being presented to me very, very differently, not based on money, but based on whether they are fulfilling and actually contribute positively to life, which, funnily enough, hasn't resulted in me earning less, in fact, quite the opposite. That's how these things tend to go. It also saw me move to Paris. And not wait until I am retired or for a perfect moment or for when I might have the perfect amount of investment or savings. So none of this is irresponsible, and all of it is what I've known I should have lived by for a very long time, all along. So I advise, if I can say that word loosely and with caution, advise Nick, you and others for now, just simply adopt a lighter touch to what you're already doing or feel you should be doing. Don't abort the sensible things. Don't become a prepper or a homesteader unless that's what you've always wanted to do, if chooks are your thing. And don't put off life. And get real about the value of money. It was only ever meant to be a symbolic thing, not the thing itself. And enjoy the relief of all of this. Get on with, and from that relief, that will create a space for you to get on with building beautiful things, relationship and love, and spending your weekend in nature rather than at a shopping mall. I hope that helps. I'm right on the 20-minute mark. Yes, look, first and foremost, at the end of the day, all of those cliches, stay wild.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.